Some hard stuff to talk about this morning. And those of you who know me well know that I enjoy science fiction and fantasy, and I think that that might give us a window into understanding a little bit of what's going on here. So I love science fiction, fantasy, TV, movies, books, all that kind of stuff. And one of my favorite shows that's on right now is called The Man in the High Castle. San Diego Comic-Con was last weekend. Those of you who don't know what that is, it's a big celebration of comic books and movies and other things that are kind of related to comic books and science fiction and fantasy. And there was a trailer that came out for season 3 of The Man in the High Castle. I'm not going to show you that trailer, but in a minute I'm going to show you the trailer for just the series itself, the first season. But let me tell you the premise behind the show first. So, The Man in the High Castle is based on a book that was written by Philip K. Dick, a very prominent science fiction author. And the premise of the book and the movie, or the show, is that the Allied powers lost the Second World War. That the Axis powers won. And so, Nazi Germany and the Empire of Japan were the victors in the Second World War. And so what would life be like a few decades later if that were actually the case? And so in the United States, the eastern part of the United States is ruled by Nazi Germany, and the western part is ruled by the Empire of Japan. And then in the middle of the country, around the Rocky Mountains, which is not really the middle, but, you know, it's kind of no man's land. There's no law and order there at all. That's where people kind of go to escape from what's going on. Now, there's some other more science fiction and fantasy kind of elements to it. There's different dimensions that people could travel between and stuff. We'll just leave all those out, right? Kind of the main idea that I want you to get is this thought experiment of what life would be like had we lost the Second World War, had our nation been conquered by Nazi Germany and by the Empire of Japan. So let's take a quick look at the trailer and kind of get us into that kind of feeling a little bit.
You could do anything with your life. What would you like to do?
Well, my father told me what it was like before the war. He said every man was free. America, I want my country back.
America. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the Axis powers of America. And to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under rule, divided with liberty and justice for none.
Evil triumphs only when good men do nothing.
I'm here because I want to do the right thing.
Take this. What is this? A way out.
Gives you just a little taste of what the show was like, and maybe it helps you imagine what life might be like today if the world were like that. If we had lost the Second World War, if there were a totalitarian regime who'd taken over our country and all of our liberties and all of our freedoms were stripped away. Freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, all those things that we enjoy and thrive in because of who we are as a country. What if all of that were taken away from us? That's exactly what happened to the people of Israel. Their country was conquered by the superpower in the world of that day. You know, we are the superpower in the world today, the United States, and so it's hard for us to put ourselves on the other side of that, but imagine what it must have been like for the Babylonian Empire, this great army, to walk into Israel, to lay siege to the city of Jerusalem, to tear down the walls, to tear down the temple where they had worshipped for centuries. where everyone had gathered together to praise God? What if all of that were gone? What if they killed so many of our young men? And what if they sent the rest into exile, away from the land that had been promised to them, away from their home, away from everything they had ever known? That's the kind of grief and sorrow and pain that the author of this psalm is experiencing when they write it. It's hard for us, I think, to wrap our heads around exactly what that would be like. But maybe we can, because many of us have experienced at least some of those kinds of emotions and that depth of emotion. I actually went out to the prison, Riverbend, this morning and preached at a worship service out there. I preached the same sermon, but it was different preaching to them because they very much understand what it's like to be held captive, to have those rights stripped away from you, to experience that level of anguish. And that is what we see in the psalm. Let's take a look at it again. Joe did a magnificent job reading it for us, but I want us to look at it one more time, just to really kind of listen for the emotions that are behind the words that are written. And so the first verse says, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and there we wept when we remembered Zion." There is sadness and sorrow. They're in this strange place and they are looking back at the way that life used to be and they are sad because they've lost it. It's gone and maybe even gone forever. The second verse tells us, "On the willows there we hung up our harps." I hear resignation in that, a loss of hope, a giving up, that what they have faced, what they have endured is just too much, and how do they keep going on? Verse 3 and 4 read, "For there our captors asked us for songs, and our tormentors asked for mirth, saying, 'Sing us the songs of Zion.' How could we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land?" I hear shame in that. Shame that they had this life before and things were going great and now they've been defeated. And they can't sing these songs that used to be theirs. These songs that used to express their identity, used to express the joy of what it meant to be the Jewish people. They can't sing them anymore, because they're ashamed. Ashamed at the loss they faced. Ashamed that they've been defeated. Ashamed that maybe they've even been unfaithful to God. Verses 5 and 6 tell us, "If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand wither. Let my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not set Jerusalem above my highest joy." In those words, I hear anger. Anger certainly at the people who've done this to them, but even more so anger at themselves. They want to be able to sing these songs again. They want to remember Jerusalem. They want to be faithful, and they just can't. In the face of the weight of all of this, they just can't anymore. And so they're angry at themselves. Verse 7, "Remember, O Lord, remember against the Edomites the day of Jerusalem's fall, how they said, 'Tear it down, down to its foundations.'" Hatred. Hatred. This other country, the Edomites, who used to be allies, who used to be friends, were taunting them and rejoicing in their defeat. Hatred. And then last, these final two verses, ones that are probably the hardest. "O daughter Babylon, you devastator, happy shall they be who pay you back for what you have done to us. Happy shall they be, who take your little ones and dash them against the rock. Rage. Rage against the ones who have perpetrated this violence against them. Rage against the ones who have hurt them so deeply. There is so much pain that all they can do is lash out, or at least want to lash out, and hurt those who have hurt them. Rage. Uncontrollable rage. Rage even against the children and the babies of the ones who have done this. Rage. Hatred. Anger. Sorrow. Sadness. Despair. All of those things the people of Israel feeling, and all of those things we feel sometimes. And it is a heavy weight to feel those things. It's like you've got something strapped around your neck weighing you down, or you've got a huge backpack full of rocks or books or something really heavy just weighing you down. It's hard to take a step and another step and another step. It's hard to lift up, to raise up out of bed or out of a chair. It's hard to do anything when you're feeling all of those things. We know what it is that made the people of Israel feel that way. The Babylonian Empire coming in and conquering them and destroying everything that they loved and cared for and sending them away. But what is it that makes us feel those things? Is it loss or tragedy in our own lives? A loved one who's died? A close confidant who has betrayed you? A dream that won't come true? A hope that seems like it will never be realized? Or maybe it's an injustice that's been perpetrated against you or against someone that you love. Last Sunday evening, I went to a performance called Frozen Moments. One of my friends wrote it and starred in it, and she asked me to attend. And it's based on the Me Too movement. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Me Too movement, the whole idea behind it is that in our society, women especially, have been sexually harassed and sexually abused by men for centuries, for all of human history. And that a lot of that is now coming to light. That people who are in power, those who are not in power, have been afraid to speak up. But now they are. Harvey Weinstein is maybe the most famous example, the movie executive who did all kinds of things to women to put them in parts and movies and all kinds of stuff. And the whole idea behind the Me Too movement is that women especially are hearing these stories of other women and they are saying, me too. Something like that happened to me and I can't sit on it any longer. I can't stay silent. I have to speak and to share because it's true and it's powerful and it's real. And maybe if I share, somebody else will have the courage to share as well. And so this performance was five women who had met together for several months and they shared their own Me Too stories with each other. And out of that, they created this show. It's kind of a variety show almost. They each got up and they shared their Me Too stories. They wrote songs and sang those. They did little bits on pop culture. So it's like things that they learned from pop culture that relate to the Me Too movement. The one that sticks in my mind, and most of these are tongue-in-cheek, but the one that sticks in my mind is about the movie Grease. What they learned from the movie Grease is that all a woman has to do to have a man fall in love with her is change everything about herself. Right? That kind of stuff. And they shared powerful stories. But probably the most powerful thing for me in listening to it was that they shared stories that their mothers told them. Each one of them went to their mothers and asked, do you have a Me Too story? And they took those and they kind of because they were really hard. They kind of made them into fairy tales almost. So they had a book and they started each one with Once Upon a Time just to kind of ease a little bit of the burden of it. One was that there was one of the moms worked in a hospital for her whole career. And she would ride the elevator up and down every day, going from floor to floor, doing her different tasks. And that every time she would get in the elevator, a male doctor would walk in and would pinch her bottom or grab her. And many times at the end of the day, she would go home and she couldn't even sit down because she was bruised and sore. Another woman went to her mom, and her dad was there as well, and asked her mom, "Mom, do you have a Me Too moment you could share?" And the mom turned to the dad and said, "Honey, do I have a Me Too moment?" Just so ingrained, looking to the men in her life. But the one that really stuck with me, the one that was the hardest to hear, was a mom when she was a young child, about 10 years old. She had an older brother. And her parents would go out on the weekends to go on a date night, or they might leave for a few days on a little trip. And every time that they did, the brother made her go to her bedroom. And he would go with her. And he would molest her. Eventually, she worked up the courage to tell her mom about it. And her mom told her, "We can't tell anybody. It'll bring shame on you and on our family. It will destroy your dad if he finds out. We can't tell anybody." And so when she told her daughter that story, she said, "I have held this secret in a box for 60 years, and I haven't been able to tell anybody." Can you imagine what that would feel like to hold for 60 years and not be able to let it out? And not share with anyone. Friends, there are awful and terrible things that happen in this life. And sometimes we feel terrible because of them. But feeling terrible does not make you a terrible person. It makes you human. It makes you human. These feelings are actually a gift from God to us. And it is normal and natural and appropriate, I think even faithful, to feel these kinds of things in response to the terrible things that happen in life. But the real question for me becomes, what do we do with these feelings? I know one thing that we don't do. We don't actually bash the heads of children against rocks. We can feel like we want to do that. We can have so much hatred and anger and rage inside of us that we want to do that. But we don't actually do that as people of God. We don't take these feelings and use them to be hurtful and harmful and destructive. Instead, we find ways to express them. Just like this psalm does. This psalm is a work of poetry, a work of song. Some way, through art or whatever it might be, to get these feelings out, to share them and express them in the world. But we don't use them to hurt, to destroy. Instead, we use them to create, to give life and hope to others. There's a strange thing that happens in those last few verses. The author is looking back on the past, looking back on what used to be, and is remembering it in a certain kind of way, and that since that is gone, since that is threatened, they react with these feelings and who knows, maybe with these acts of violence. That happens to us as human beings, doesn't it? That we look back on the past and we don't see it exactly for what it was. If you remember the clip that we showed, at the very beginning, the main male character talks about how his father told him that before the war, everyone was free. Really? Everyone was free in the United States before World War II? Women enjoyed just as much rights and freedom as men? African Americans and other minorities were free in every sense of the word? Native Americans? No. No. Even in the land of the free, people have been oppressed and marginalized and subjugated throughout our history. And yet we look back on the past and we say, oh, it's way better than it actually was. And maybe that's what the author of this psalm is doing too. Looking back on life in Jerusalem and at the temple and saying, it was wonderful, it was fantastic, it was amazing. And maybe it wasn't so much. I think there's that stream of thought in our culture and society today. Dare I say it, that slogan, Make America Great Again, brings up those same kind of images, that in the past everything was great and we need to go back to the past. And this psalm almost says that we're even willing to do violence to get there. And that's the way it feels in our world today. People are willing to do violence, sometimes physical violence, but certainly emotional and social violence to one another. All because of a misremembering of how the past used to be. When I originally wrote this sermon, I wanted to end on kind of a positive note. Most of the Psalms of Lament actually do that. They go through and they lay out all these complaints, but then at the very end, they end by praising God and saying, you know, even in the midst of all this, God, you are with me, and I praise you, and I thank you. But this psalm doesn't. This psalm ends with images of hatred and rage and violence. And so maybe part of the message today is that it's okay to sit in the midst of those feelings. That we don't have to pretend like everything is okay. That we can sit with our anger, with our sadness, with our hatred, and with our rage. And that God is big enough to accept all of that, to love us anyway, to sit beside us in the midst of our grief and our anger, to wade through those waters together, and to be with us on the other side. We can be angry, we can be sad, we can be filled with guilt and shame and anger even at ourselves. God still loves us. And God wants us to share all those feelings, certainly with God, but even with one another. And it's through the sharing that God brings healing. That when truth comes to light, there is power. Amen.